This podcast is not suitable for children or those who are easily disturbed. Spoiler warning for whatever is in the title of this episode.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to thehorrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible and all other major podcast apps.
Welcome to episode 82 of The Horror of Babylon, where we discuss Jerusalem's Lot and One for the Road. I am Ryan, and with me as always is Daniel. Say hi, Daniel.
Hi, Daniel.
And we have Hef here, too.
How y'all doing? Good to be here.
Thank you to our patrons, Abigail the First, Breaker of Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan,
the Full Metal Patron.
And for Horseman Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall in Morgantown, West Virginia, or the Mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and say hello to the last known survivor of the name of the ship. I can't remember, but his name is Rompley, and he is... It's like the... I keep wanting to say Slave One, but obviously it's not Slave One. What's the name of the ship?
Slave One?
No, the ship from Alien.
Aliens?
Oh, I don't remember.
Nostradamus? Yeah, I thought you were like the alien fanboy. Hold on.
I like the alien.
What's the name of the ship in Alien?
I want to say Nostromo.
Nostromo. Yeah, that's right? It. Nostromo. Okay.
I've never watched that movie.
You said you didn't like that movie last time you were here.
The first one?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, that one I've watched. The other ones I haven't.
Yeah. Our next 8 Four Horsemen bonus episodes have been determined from the order of God, a.k.a. Ron himself. Our next 8 Four Horsemen bonus episodes will be the Alien-a-thon, where we review all 8 Alien movies. Like, when I heard that, I was kind of upset, because I'm not the biggest Alien fan. But I was like, well, at least this will make Daniel happy. But turns out he only likes 2 of them.
They also release, right when we finish this up.
I thought the new one came out next year.
One of them's coming out soon. Hold on.
I thought it was 2024.
Maybe I misread that then.
When is the new Alien movie?
Because there's 2 of them. There's
August. It's next summer.
Oh, it's next summer. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Nice. Alien-a-thon next year.
No. But you haven't seen Covenant, though, right?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so at least that'll be new. I've only seen 3. At least some of this will be new.
Yeah.
All right. So you can stay tuned for that. The first episode of the Alien-a-thon drops on Thursday, July 27th with Alien, the sci-fi horror classic from 1979.
79, dude!
It's like 69, but 10 better.
I just pictured that you missed a little bit.
Like 10 degrees?
Yeah, like one person went a little too far.
Well, then you just, like, move over.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you seen A History of Violence?
Mm-mm.
It has a 69 in it. Viggo Mortensen, Aragorn, he 69s this girl in it.
Oh, now I have to see it.
Your history with Jerusalem's Lot and One for the Road. Daniel, have you ever read these stories before this?
No. When we were planning our original release for Salem's Lot, you told me these existed. And that's when I found out. And then... whenever you said, hey, we're finally just going to do Salem's Lot.
Because fuck it.
Yeah, I was like, all right, are we doing these? And you're like, yeah, so write them.
F, have you ever read these prior to this podcast?
I found Night Shift on a sale on eBay for very cheap, so I ordered it and got it, and the first thing I did was read those first 2 stories. Are those 2 stories in it, because it's like Jerusalem's Lot is like the first one, then
it's
like
the first one,
and One for the Road is like near the end.
It's the penultimate.
Yeah, it's one of those. So I read both of those in like a day.
It's like a nice little sandwich.
I also read them directly after reading Salem's Lot, because I wanted more Salem's Lot, and initially was pretty disappointed with both, but enjoyed them immensely more on the second read.
The vampires are pure myth, superstition. I may be able to bring you proof that the superstition of yesterday can become the scientific reality of today.
Background for Jerusalem's Lot, which will be the first story we will be reviewing because it comes first both in terms of its writing and chronologically. Jerusalem's Lot is both an epistolary prequel to Salem's Lot, and it's Stephen King's intentional stab at writing an H.P. Lovecraft story. It was written while he was in college, before he wrote Salem's Lot, and first published in the short story collection Night Shift in 1978, which published 3 years after Salem's Lot, and it, as Hef just said, is the first story in Stephen King's first short story collection. And it has two adaptations. This first one I didn't know existed until today. There is a comic book adaptation by Glenn Chadbourne, which, yes, I will be trying to get a hold of. And in 2021, it was released as what was originally played out to be like a miniseries, but was recently announced as getting a second season, Chapel Wait, starring Adrian Brody.
It's alive! In the name of God! Now I know what it feels like to be God!
General discussion. Jerusalem's Lot. So if you haven't read the story and you want like a general shakedown, I have a pretty good lore video that goes over the general history of Jerusalem's Lot and how it pertains to Salem's Lot. You can see a link for that in the show notes, and that is from the YouTube channel Stephen King Book Club, which I watch a ton of their lore videos, really enjoy them. Daniel, what did you think of Jerusalem's Lot?
I really liked it. It is indeed Stephen King writing an H.P. Lovecraft story. You told me that and I didn't know what to expect. And I was like, oh, okay, so it literally is just an H.P. Lovecraft story.
I think that was the exercise he said, I want to write as if it were Lovecraft. And this is not his only short story he does as this in. We'll bring up another one in further reading. But it's if you read it and I just told you this was written by H.P. Lovecraft, would you believe that?
If I had like no prior knowledge of love, or if I only had like tertiary knowledge of Lovecraft and Stephen King, you could pass this off as an H.P. Lovecraft story.
I disagree.
Tell us why.
Okay. The reason is because like the characters are actually comprehensible.
Not enough racism.
The characters are comprehensible, like most of the time in most H.P. Lovecraft stuff. It's just like, I'm an intellectual person and these astronomical things are happening.
You know what? The main character did say he used to be married, which means he wasn't an asexual scientist, so he couldn't be a Lovecraft character.
I mean, there it is right there. I mean, that adds to the fun, though. Salem's Lot has really good build-up, like the world-building that went into it whenever it was going on there. Like, it amps up everything as the story goes to the point where, like, the select few that remain, it really does feel like kind of an against-the-world scenario. And I feel like Jerusalem's Lot has that same element where, like, it gives you just a little tidbit as it goes through and then builds up to this, like, penultimate confrontation and then really kind of sets itself kind of ablaze with it. So it definitely has the same, like, beats is what I think. Like, it's just that Salem's Lot, the novel went for a lot longer, but it follows kind of the same.
It's kind of a shortened version.
For the most part.
Yeah.
Like, I like how well it fit. Like, the atmosphere of the short story very much matched the ambiance of the book.
Right. How does this compare to H.P. Lovecraft?
I've only read Call of Cthulhu.
How does it compare to Call of Cthulhu?
It's much better.
I disagree. But...
and Reanimator. Those are the only two I've read. So I'm not exactly an H.P. Lovecraft scholar.
Sorry, I was just thinking about Reanimator.
It's so good. Reanimator is also better than Call of Cthulhu.
I like how the characters in this like story are kind of confused. Like they're like it feels like they're always like kind of on the stage of being like, you know, Bones, we really should be understanding what's happening, but I really don't want to. Like that's kind of what I got.
Hey, because it's a Lovecraft story.
I really don't understand.
Because as soon as they start to understand, they go insane and die.
Yeah.
And then their journal's left behind for someone to completely dismiss and repeat the process.
Yeah.
That's Lovecraft.
That's exactly what happens in Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
He finds the journal And then bad things happen and he dies, and then it's like, ooh, who's going to find the journal next?
And only in this one it tells you who finds the journal next. Yeah,
just descended.
I think my favorite part in this, I listened to this on a, somebody read it on YouTube. They were describing parts in the book, and now I kind of want to like get like a physical copy to see it. He wrote out goddamn, but like scratched it out. This me saying this right now isn't what's actually being written. I'm just trying to describe how it looks on the page. And I was like, yeah, like how do you audiobook scratching out goddamn?
I guess you read the sentence once with it and then read the sentence again without it, but that would have been confusing.
Yeah.
If you weren't like,
and that's just, it's just like one of those rare instances where I'm like, that sort of gag or that sort of thing works best in the written format.
Yeah. I guess at the end of the page, you could say, ding, editor's note. The word goddamn is scratched out. Yeah.
And I just thought about that. I was like, you know, I think more stories in this style should do shit like that, like missing spots, like maybe there was a stain there.
Yeah.
Or like force a drawing in there, like somebody did a quick sketch. Yeah. I feel like there's more people could do with this particular format, and it actually makes me want to write like this more.
Well, I also listened to it on audio, so when he said in the story that he did like a quick sketch of the writing that they found, is that actually in the book, printed book?
I don't recall it. Could be I wasn't paying as much attention because I read it in like a single day, but I mean,
it's pretty short.
Yeah, I don't recall it. I mean, it's in the forefront of my mind. I don't recall it.
I just think it's like clever little ideas like that.
No, yeah, it's cool. Stephen King does epistolary stuff a lot, but it's always like incorporated into like a more typical novel structure, but it's rare that he does completely epistolary.
Yeah, I really liked it in It, mm-hmm. where it's like broken up.
Yeah, but I liked this. But of course, you know, it's a short story as opposed to a novel, so it was easier to do an entire story in journal entries and such. But I really enjoyed the structure.
How did you feel about the worm?
I think the end is the weakest part for me. Like, I think the build up is better than the payoff.
Oh, so it's like an H.P. Lovecraft story.
Yeah, because I mean that's what I felt about Call of Cthulhu too, because I enjoyed more the descriptions of them hunting down the cult
and the mystery aspects, yeah. As opposed to like Squid Godzilla.
Yeah, exactly.
Them at the church was the best part of the book to me.
I liked when they found the church the first time.
Mm.
I not so much when they go back to the church and
the first time they get there, like, yeah. Where they just have that sense that's like something is just like watching them and stuff like that. Like,
no, the worst part is I could picture like the three of us going to a church like this and going, hey, look at this fucked up book, let's take that with us,
guys. The star's upside down.
We did
down.
Go to a church. Yeah. Once.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we won't talk about that. Did you find Jerusalem's Lot scary?
I think the scariest parts were before there was any actual reveals, and I have the same opinion of H.P. Lovecraft stories. It's like whenever you're not quite sure what's there yet. Mm-hmm. Those are always the best parts, and that's when I feel tense. I feel tense thinking about going through an abandoned church and you think something's watching you, but you're not quite sure.
You hear scratching in your walls, and at first you're like, oh, it's rats, but then it happens so often and it's so loud, maybe it's not rats.
Yeah, as opposed to when you see like an entire actual cult and a giant worm, mm-hmm. enchanting. I'm like, maybe it's just because I've seen that so many times, I'm a little desensitized to it, but I found like the build up to be kind of tense.
Yeah.
The background, like even like his, was it his uncle that hung himself?
Yes.
After his daughter fell down the stairs?
Yeah, I think.
Okay. So like hearing about those sorts of backgrounds, I'm like, oh, that's tragic. That's sort of creepy. Going down in the basement's kind of freaking me out. But then seeing them as like monsters, I'm like, that's about the best in terms of a monster scare that the story does for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it escalates from that, I'm like, okay, I'm...
The basement scene was better than the end at the church.
Yeah.
But it's still, like, I prefer the ominous build-up and just, like, the world-building and the unraveling the clues and the finding of the diary and the reading of the diary and...
And I think it's just because I'm, like, a whore for clues and shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I think actually reading Salem's Lot first kind of helped me with particular ending of it, because I think if I'd have read this and I didn't know that it was a story about vampires, I kind of would have felt cheated once I got to the fact that it's a vampire.
Yeah.
Oh. Like, modern me probably would have been like, well, that's stupid. Whereas, like, going in and knowing it's a vampire ahead of time was kind of just like, oh, cool, extra content. This is cool.
Vampire and zombies are, the two things that a lot of times when people get them now, they're like, oh.
They're the two most overplayed of, like, their typical monster things.
Yeah. And not that I don't think that they can be done well, and because I love myself some vampire shit, but I understand that, like, mentality.
That's why I limit my exposure to both vampire and zombie media, because I really enjoy good ones of both.
Yeah.
But there's so much out there.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wish I could talk like these old-timey dudes. I love their vocabulary.
I really enjoyed the historical references. The main character is writing to his friend Bones in Florida, and they're both abolitionists, and he's talking about how Bones has to go down to Florida to recuperate from health problems, and he's like, now don't give those slavers too much of your opinion, or they'll throw you out of the state, and because I know you can go on and on about it, just like our good friend Calhoun, which is a reference to mid-19th century American politician John C. Calhoun. And there's also a reference to Increase Mather, who was one of the ministers involved in the Salem witch trials, and there's just like a lot of little Easter eggs like that, which are fun.
It's the reason every time there's like history references, I just wait for Ryan to explain it to me.
Increase Mather was a really, well, hit like the whole, well, there were multiple like Mathers involved in the Salem witch trials, and he was a really interesting person who had some really different takes on the happenings in Salem, Massachusetts.
He's our resident historian. He's the one that's going to pick up the dusty old book.
How quizzical.
Yeah.
I was initially, like the first time I read it, I wanted it to be more actually linked to the events of Salem's Lot.
Like an actual...
actual prequel,
because you could honestly pretty far remove this from Salem's Lot if with like one or two minor edits.
I see stuff like this more as DLC.
Yeah,
like it's just extra content. It doesn't necessarily, it fits into like a mythos rather than being like a direct origin story.
Is it free DLC, or is this one of the ones you got to get a season pass for and go, why was this only an hour long?
Background on One for the Road, it is a quote-unquote sequel to Salem's Lot, first published in the March and April issues in 1977 from the magazine Maine, later collected in Night Shift. It is the penultimate story in that collection. Hef, what did you think of One for the Road?
I weirdly like this one more than the other one. There's something about a grim scene in a bar. I don't know, like it just has this ambiance that I like. Like you got these boys and they've seen everything they want to see out of life. But then this random stranger walks in and presents to them something that they have to go back and confront in some way, shape, or form, even though they swore they never would.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I like the setup for that.
Previous experience?
I don't know. Like, they just have these things of, like, you know, they know the lot's bad. Like, they, from stories or just general, just hearsay, they know, like, it's a bad... It's in, like, if they haven't seen it, that's how bad it is, because it's ingrained into them.
You got, like, a couple dudes who know what's going on and one dude who doesn't know what's going on, and it creates, like,
I think the payoff for this one's better than what
Jerusalem's Lot. I agree that this one has the better payoff of the two, but just overall, I don't enjoy it as much.
It's shorter, which I think makes it a little bit
My only condensed. Issue with the story is one of the things I like best about Salem's Lot is its ending, and where you don't get a direct answer is, hey, is this going to work, and are they going to get rid of all the vampires? And this straight up tells you, no, they failed.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I think shorter stories can deal with stinger endings a little bit like that, though. Like, I don't
really call this a stinger ending, though.
I mean, it's basically just like it didn't work out. That's always what I consider.
I prefer not knowing, but this tells me. This answered the question.
Shorter stories, I tend to be less harsh about.
Yeah,
that's just me.
It is like 2/3 the length of Jerusalem's Lot.
Oh yeah, it's what, 20 pages. It's very short.
I don't know.
It's barely... I think it scratches 20 pages.
I think, for me, it's just, like, my favorite thing of Salem's Lot is the world building, and this has immensely less than Jerusalem's Lot does.
It's also immensely shorter.
Creepy vampire girl also is, like... Ew.
I did like her, like, just standing on the snow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That sort
floating,
of imagery.
Her floating cool. there. Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. I like that he beamed her with a Bible to get away.
Yeah, buddy.
I would like to see, like, just thinking about that, like, because, you know, crosses burn them in Salem's Lot. Like, let's just throw a Bible. We'll, like, leave a that's like a huge book-shaped burn mark on
them. Or could you could you just throw the Hunger Games and it wouldn't matter? Just hit them with a
book. Is this one on the dollar baby list?
It's okay. It's just, it's kind of simple. It's, guy gets lost. They go and find his family. His family are turned into vampires. They bail. Like, that's, you can sum up the whole story in, like, 20 seconds.
Yeah. It's also 20 pages, so, I mean, I'm not looking for anything real complicated when I dive in. If you're quoting Lovecraft to me and I have to, like, read 20 pages of it, that physically makes me want to just shit myself. Like, just no. Because, like, I've done it with, what was that one? There was one, like, because there's a few of his stories that they're, like, 20 pages, but they feel like forever.
It's because his paragraphs are, like, this long.
Yeah. I'm just not about trying to shove as much content in as possible. Sometimes I just like something simple.
It's like reading Nietzsche, where, his paragraphs are, like, this long, and it's, like, two sentences.
Yeah, I don't want to have to transcribe anything to be able to read a short story. That's just my preference. So, it was short. It was simple. I liked it.
Yeah. It was, I mean, I didn't dislike it. It's fine. Really disliked it the first time. Because I was like, this has absolutely, like, nothing to do with Salem's Lot, other than it takes place in Salem's Lot, and it answers the question that you probably didn't want to know anyway. Or if it did answer the question, like, tell me what happened to Ben and... what's the kid's name?
Oh, Mark.
Mark, yeah.
They set the fire and left.
Or they died in the fire.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they got killed by vampires.
Or they got arrested for burning down Salem's
Lot. Yeah, and they're in jail.
Now they're in jail. Forever.
But yeah, but I liked it a lot more the second time because I was less...
critical.
The first time, I just wanted an actual sequel to Salem's Lot.
Okay.
Which this is not. It's more like a...
side story?
Yeah.
DLC characters.
Yeah.
Costumes for Dead or Alive. That's what
Beach
it was for
volleyball.
Me.
Volleyball. Ah!
Oh my God, are you Stephen King?
No, I'm Dean Koontz.
Oh.
Daniel, what is your king for both stories?
My king for Jerusalem's Lot is literally the, like, scratching out of the words on a page, because I'm like, why don't I see that more in what are these stories called?
Epistolary stories.
Like, I can't remember the last time I saw anything even remotely close to that.
Nobody tries to correct themselves, even though it's written in a letter from a first-person perspective.
Yeah, I think the only thing that comes close is something like The Color Purple, where, like, the words are spelled wrong because it's coming from the perspective of an uneducated young girl.
That would drive me nuts.
Yeah. And I don't like that book, but I'm just saying, like, that's the only thing that comes close.
It would have to be something that's dated, too.
Yeah.
Like, you couldn't do it. You couldn't do that modern day. Like, scratched it out. That just would look... that would be so weird.
I kind of want to write something like this now, where I purposely incorporate, like, stains on the page or, like, worn-out parts. I think that there's something there that isn't being tapped into its full extreme after reading. That's easy king for me for Jerusalem's Lot.
The version I listened to did not include that.
Yeah.
So, I had no idea that was in there.
Yeah.
I guess mine is just the epistolary structure. And for one for the road...
One for the road...
that they shit on New Jersey.
Mine's a little vampire girl. I think that in terms of creepy little kids, that it's as effective as it can be in a 20-page story.
I like for Jerusalem's Lot, the first time they go to the church is definitely the high point for me.
It's pretty good. It's very good.
And One for the Road, I like the setup in the bar. I don't know. That's just like it's like a setting for me.
I think it's a good setup.
I like it, just like a neat setup. And the little girl floating, I think, where the way he describes it is genuinely creepy.
Hypothetically.
Yeah.
This is our dollar baby. Who plays who?
We hire actors.
Smart answer.
I don't think we're technically old enough to capture the...
Can you even tell me the characters' names?
No. Okay.
Tukey and Booth.
Yeah.
Booth?
Well, Booth, because Booth is like...
Booth is the regular.
Yeah, but like...
I kind of picture him in big old overalls
At first, I thought that he was the son in... or the grandson from the Jerusalem's Lot one, because they were both last named Booth.
Boone.
Was it Boone and Booth?
It's in Jerusalem's Law, it's Boone.
Oh.
They're super similar, though.
In One for the Road, it's Booth.
I did read it in a day.
Yeah.
I thought they were the same last name, too, but I didn't pay much mind.
Fair enough.
Daniel Boone, John Wilkes Booth.
Two of my favorite people.
I was going to say the history buff here correcting us on the correct last names of people in 30-page stories.
Oh, well, I mean, he pays attention.
He does.
Kuntz.
For Jerusalem's Lot, it's definitely the ending.
Me too.
Same.
Not like the very tail end where
like
it's
the payoff.
But like the payoff.
Yeah, with the worm coming out and smacking the manservant across the church. And,
yeah. The other guy finding the journal and dismissing everything. I like that.
That was great. No, that was good. That's kind of a... Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One for the Road, I guess it's just...
Kuntz is hard because it's so short and compact. They didn't do a lot with his wife.
I'm going to go with... They're just so casual. I like, hey, there's probably vampires here. I know you won't believe it. I probably would have either abandoned the man like 5 steps ago or knocked him out and dragged him away.
I don't know what I would have done.
Like,
it's one of those things where, like, that's like the one thing in the story where I'm just like, I didn't really follow with is like, if these dudes are so.
Like, if these dudes
are older and they have gone this long without going, you're telling me that of all the dumb shit that they've dealt with in their years, this is what's going to make them go?
Like, if you genuinely.
Can you leave him out there by himself, Booth?
No.
Yeah, see, that's just too simplified. Like, I don't know. Like, if you've spent your entire life, like, avoiding a place, like, I refuse to believe.
It's only 2 years after.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. See, I read these in a day. I don't remember.
Did you?
I did.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That's going to be our new clip.
I read these in a day.
It takes place 2 years after the novel.
I swear they didn't actually, like, experience anything.
They've never been... They didn't know that it's just stories.
I mean, that just also kind of is like, they didn't vibe that they left. There's arguments I say that you could make that, like, say, you know, well, obviously if there's a kid involved, maybe.
Yeah.
That's what propels them. So, I mean, I don't know. Short story.
They went to rescue the wife and kid. That's why they went.
Yeah, I mean.
And they probably... I would like to think if I were in that situation when I saw the car empty and there was nobody directly outside of the car, probably should have left.
Yeah, right there. I wouldn't have stuck around.
We're going to go get the sheriff.
As soon as he popped back out and said they're gone, I'd have been like, nope, bye.
All right, get in the car.
Yeah, no. I know you're having a bad day and you're going to have a worse day forever, but...
I would like to think that maybe I would have tried, but I probably would have ended up dead.
I probably would have been like just grabbing onto the guy and just let him go, Boone. Let him go, Booth.
Booth is one of the two guys.
Yeah.
He's Blumley. I know. I mean, like, why does it matter?
Booth.
Why does it matter?
I meant, like, the one guy would have said to the other one, just let you don't go. Let him go do his thing. He's clearly lost his mind at this point. Let him go, Booth.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
Where are we at, rankings?
Yeah, and I did my rankings. One for the Road, third from the... So I'll just go through mine since... Short story is so short. And again, you can find the link to our short stories Google Drive in the show notes. We have 9 short stories so far. From the bottom for me, All That You Love Will Be Carried Away by Stephen King, Night Surf by Stephen King, One for the Road by Stephen King, The Phantom Rickshaw by Rudyard Kipling, The Call of Cthulhu by H.P. Lovecraft, and then I put Jerusalem's Lot by Stephen King at number 4, The Boogeyman by Stephen King at number 3, Dracula's Guest by Bram Stoker at number 2, and The Mark of the Beast by Rudyard Kipling at number 1. Mr. Daniel.
Jerusalem's Lot's my number 2.
Right under The Call of Cthulhu and above The Mark of the Beast.
And One for the Road is going to be right under The Boogeyman.
Your new number 6. So that gives you... We have the same bottom two being All That You Love Will Be Carried Away in Night Surf. And then you have The Phantom Rickshaw, then One for the Road, then The Boogeyman, then Dracula's Guest, Mark of the Beast, Jerusalem's Law, and Call of Cthulhu, number 1.
Yeah.
All right, Hef, where are you? You only have The Call of Cthulhu and The Phantom Rickshaw.
Yeah.
But where would you place Jerusalem's Lot?
It would be my new number. For what you have here, it would be One for the Road, number 1. Jerusalem's Lot, number 2.
All right. Cool. I guess you haven't read any of this other stuff yet.
Is the Boogeyman a Night Surf? Or not Night Surf.
Is a Night Shift.
It's a Night Shift. I have not read it yet,
so,
but it's in there.
So is Night Surf.
Okay, let's
continue. Actually, we have done four of the, like, 20 stories in Night Shift. We're just slowly working our way through all Night Shift, purely by accident.
Yeah. Once I read those, I'll throw them in there.
Okay.
But, yeah. Phantom Rickshaw was...
That Phantom was, Rickshaw was...
That was a fun read. Yeah. That was funny.
It's pretty funny. Okay.
I promise you, I'm not crazy.
Homework. What would your vampire sex cult look like, Daniel?
It would be all femboys so that they stay forever feminine and beautiful, and they will be my harem.
My vampire sex cult would all be very fond of Nerds Rope edibles.
Ew. Oh, do you like eat them out of somebody's ass?
So, this is actually
not as bad as you think.
No, this actually comes from a incident where I watched
the Nerds Rope incident of 1935.
It was actually 2023, and it was 2 weeks ago. There would be edibles involved, and basically all the people in there would just be having edibles and not giving a fuck. That's the entirety of the thing. Because you don't have to care when you're on an edible. You just have to find somebody to fuck.
Mine's all femboy, so when people see it, they'll be like, it's
also,
an obvious...
But I like Nerds Rope. So I was like, if I'm going to eat something that's like an edible of some sort, it may as well be something I enjoy eating.
Mine would be B-52s themed. And you could only be a part of it if you're in a lobster costume. And we would all live at the beach in Maine. And there would be little shacks on the beach. And you could only have sex in the shacks.
The sex shack.
The love shack.
Yeah. Oh, love shack. God damn it. I'm so slow tonight.
Rock lobster.
Yeah, I know.
We're there.
I got it. It took me a minute.
Okay, question for the listeners.
What's your sex shack look like?
how do you decorate your sex shack? That's what I wrote. So just reach out to us on our socials and let us know. For further reading, if you enjoy Stephen King's venture into the world of H.P. Lovecraft, also check out Crouch End, which is in the Nightmares and Dreamscapes short story collection, but was originally published in the short story collection New Tales of the Cthulhu Mythos, which is a collection of H.P. Lovecraft-styled short stories written by other authors, which Stephen King contributed to. Also, I guess you could probably watch Chapel Wait.
Read Salem's Lot.
Read Dracula.
Yeah.
All right. So read those things. Upcoming on the Horror of Babylon this Sunday, we are doing our episode on the first Salem's Lot adaptation, which is Tobe Hooper's TV miniseries from 1979. And then on the following Sunday, July 30th, we are going to cover the theatrical film A Return to Salem's Lot from 1987.
That was released in theaters.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which actually, I would say, is enhanced by reading Jerusalem's Lot.
Yeah.
It really is. And then our next two Thursday bonus episodes will be on Thursday, July 20th, where we are reviewing Leon the Professional. And the Alien-a-thon begins on July 27th with Alien from 1979.
79, dude.
Thank you to our patrons, Abigail the Firstbreaker, Chains, Mother of Dragons, and...
Logan, the Full Metal Patron.
And thank you to Forestman Comics and Gaming, which you can visit at the Morgantown Mall, Morgantown, West Virginia, or the Mall at Robinson in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You can go in there and say hi to Ron and say, what's your opinion on Adrian Brody? Do you think he's great? Do you think he's completely unremarkable? Or do you just think who's Adrian Brody? Thank you for reading in one day... One for the Road in Jerusalem's Lot recording with me.
I would do it again.
Yeah, I probably will reread both of these each time I reread Salem's Lot. I would imagine.
It's like a nice little Salem's Lot sandwich.
DLC. Yeah. A little bit extra content.
Leia is a Jedi and you have to kill her. And that killed the idea of DLC for me forever.
That's what did it.
Killing Leia Organa? Yeah.
Okay.
And Microsoft announcing that all Bethesda games will be Xbox exclusives. That also
Like, that is a bit of a bite.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. All right, thank you for listening. Stay tuned for our socials and stay scary.
Stay scary, everybody.
Stay scary, folks.
And now for the obligatory socials. Please like, share, and subscribe. You can find the podcast on Twitter at HorrorPod69. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Slasher, and Goodreads. Become part of the Disturbed community by asking for the Facebook group and Discord links. Send dick pics to the horrorofbabylonpodcast@gmail.com. Support the show at patreon.com/thehorrorofbabylon. In closing, you can let your friends know that The Horror of Babylon is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audible, and all other major podcast apps. Stay scary.
Welcome to episode 81. Oh, shit. Call me the space cowboy.
Okay, so that's the first one.
Some people call me the gangster love.
Second one.
Some people call me Maurice.
What's the context of this conversation?
What's a poppetus?
What?
What's a poppetus?
A poppetus?
And I speak from the poppetus of love.
She told me that I didn't need any more hentai and then sent me more
Maybe
hentai.
Maybe I'm saying it wrong. The picker.
I think you have to say picka now. Third one.
That one, no.
Okay.
The other two, possibly.
All right.
Wait a minute. That's not it. It's the Joker. The Joker lyrics. Is that the name of the song? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because I speak from the pompetus of love. What's a pompetus?
Is it like a dumb hippopotamus?
Maybe. Noun, pompetus. One who is a pompetus or splendid.
One who is pompous or splendid.
Pompous or splendid. Oh, okay.
Oh, so I've heard people called pomp before.
Yeah, I know what pomp, like, you know, like pomp and circumstance. And I know what pompous is. It's like Darcy from Pride and Prejudice. But pompetus, I guess it's just a noun for someone who is
from the pomp.
Ostentatious spectacle. Okay.
Pompetus of love.
And I speak. All right, hold on. Let's take it from the top. Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some people call me the gangster of love. Some people call me Maurice LaMarche.
Wow.
Who played a brain and Pinky in the Brain. Because I speak of the Pompetus of Love.
How do you just know who plays Brain off of Pinky and the Brain?
You don't?
No.
Oh. I mean, he's one of like
Hermes Conrad, I think. That's Phil Lamar, isn't it?
That's Phil Lamar, okay. Who is also Kit Fisto in and Bail Organa in Star Wars The Clone Wars, and he was Jon Stewart in the Green Lantern cartoon.
He is also
Hermes Conrad.
Yeah, and he's Jack from Samurai Jack.
He is. Yes, yeah. He is.
Mm-hmm. I'm learning so much today.
No, you're not. You're not going to remember any of this.
No.
I am Kit Fisto. All right.
Barbados Slim.
I hate Barbados Slim.
You're supposed to.
I hate him everyone. So much. I was not a big fan of La Barbara.
La Barbara is worse.
Yeah.
Because at least with Barbados Slim, he's accepting he's an asshole.
Woman, I'm tired. I've got to get up five times to play Xbox.